Are you ready, Carl?
Yes.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Carla, please call the roll.
Udaly?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Wheeler?
Here. Carla, could you please read items 1146 through 1148?
1146, adopt the Central City 2035 plan, amend the comprehensive plan map, transportation system plan, Willamette Greenway plan, Willamette River Greenway inventory, scenic resources protection plan, zoning map and Title 33, repeal and replace prior Central City plans and documents. 1147, adopt the Central City 2035 plan action charts, performance targets, and urban design diagrams. At 1148, adopt the Central City 2035 plan green loop concept report.
Today's session is a continuation of the Central City 35 matter. As you recall, we held hearings and took public testimony on September 7th, September 14th, and September 20th. There is no public testimony today. Commissioner Fritz?
Thank you, Mayor. Since one of the things that we're discussing today is the potential conflicts of interest for one of the advisory committees, I do need to state on the record that I am the co-owner of a condominium at Northwest Flanders and 8th. There are 27 other co-owners, and I think the likelihood of them wanting to do anything to their building in terms of demolishing and rebuilding are slim to none. And that particular property is looked to be down to have less height. So I'm going to continue to participate, but I did just want to say that on the record, that I certainly know the area very well because I visit my son and daughter-in-law quite a lot.
Very good. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Today we're going to discuss items of interest to council members and decide if we want to consider amendments, if amendments are not already on the table. The topics that we have on today's list are the following. First, the West Quadrant SAC property ownership. Second, the height and FAR. Third, scenic views. Fourth, the transportation system plan. Fifth, zoning and use allowances. And sixth, green buildings. So here's how staff and I propose that this work. The staff will come up. They'll introduce the topic. That will include the following for each of these items. Some background, any proposed amendment. And if there's handouts or PowerPoints, that'll be the appropriate time for that. We'll identify which council member or council members asked that these issues be discussed. And then we'll give the commissioner who requested the item to be on the agenda the first shot at beginning the discussion. After the council has had a chance to ask questions and hold a discussion, I'll call the question, and I'll ask if there are if there's the desire to put forward an amendment related to this topic. If there's no amendment proposed after the discussion, because some of these amendments were put on the table for discussion purposes, and after all the testimony and the discussion, the commissioner may wish to withdraw the amendment. So if there's no amendment, I'll move on to the next item. Just to be clear, so if there's no second on an item, the proposed amendment will not be part of the amendment package that will be heard on January 18th. And at the very tag end of our meeting, staff is going to confirm the items that will be the subject of the hearing on January 18th and any items that we'll return to for more discussion on November 2nd or December 6th. Does that make sense to folks? Very good. And if you didn't follow that, don't worry about it. The staff is well prepped and they'll guide us through this. Joe, can you kick things off with a overview of the height and FAR in the Central City? And as per usual, people could just identify themselves for the record. That's
Thank
always
you.
Helpful.
So we're
Thank
starting
you.
With height?
Your overview. Yeah.
Yes. Good afternoon, commissioners and mayor. I'm Joe Zender, chief planner for the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. The first item, since so much of what we're going to talk about today are amendments or issues related to maximum building heights and floor area ratios in the Central City, I wanted to do just a quick overview. of what those are about and how we treat them in the plan. And I'm going to use a few slides to do that.
Well, we don't see any of these slides.
Oh, there they go.
Joe, now we see these slides.
Okay, thank you.
We can see that there are slides. We can't actually read
right,
what's on
them. We see them this morning, so there's something miraculous.
Yeah, this set is not so consequential, but you have a lot of important slides to look at today that are going to help you with your decisions. So, Central City Heights. This just shows you, before the 1980s Central City Plan, our heights in the Central City were pretty liberal. 460 feet was sort of the norm. And with the 88 plan, we started to move into a regime that's more close to what we have today, which is that we use where we allow greater building heights for specific policy purposes, and that's part of what I'm going to explain today. Second, it's really important as we talk about heights in the Central City to understand that we're applying a system of maximum building heights on a very unique situation of these 200 foot by 200 foot blocks. That's really small for an American city. It's 200 feet by 200 feet that doesn't have an alley either. So the development of that block is pretty tricky. All the loading, all the access, everything is around the perimeter of that lot. We incorporate extra height into our maximum heights to allow flexibility to work around some of the challenges that causes. Third, I wanted to point out the way we do maximum building heights also works hand in hand with floor area ratios. And floor area ratio, right, is the system by which we calculate how many square feet of development you can put on a site. So this slide you're looking at is sort of a typical 400 foot or 200 foot by 200 foot Central City block. The way floor area ratio works is you take the square foot of feet of that size of that site and multiply it by the ratio, and that's how much you get to build. And so the sort of the lower corner where the site is built out with a complete block is often or possibly how that looks like. But part of the reason for adding height is to allow buildings to be designed in a variety of ways and still accomplish the amount of development that we want to see in the Central City, that total floor area ratio and its plus bonuses these days. You can use it in situations where you're trying to preserve part of the site and build around it and still get your square feet on there. You can use it in situations where you're trying to not just preserve part of the site but use part of the site for a lower intensive use like a plaza and go up even higher. And you could use it just because of the business purposes of that's your the type of building that you're trying to build. So the two work together. And then finally, I just wanted to talk about there's sort of nine principles, there's nine considerations that you're going to see in these discussions of height. Where do we allow more height in the Central City? Typically, and you'll see it, we use it to where we want to have the most development. FAR, the floor area, and the height goes hand in hand. For policy purposes, we've always put that in the downtown, and along our transit mall because we're trying to maximize close access and business support, use support for the transit mall. Secondly, we make sure that our height works with the amount of floor area, the amount of square feet that we want in a different part of the Central City. Third, and this is something that we've introduced with or emphasized in this plan, that we want to provide extra height to provide flexibility for both the design of our buildings, that you don't have to just extrude up a solid block. You have the ability to go with more smaller floor plates and so do some architecture as you go higher. And you have the ability to work with some really complicated sites. For instance, the one we'll talk about today are the bridgeheads that are have constraints due to ramps and the like. In this version, you're going to see that we only allow more heights in return for a bonus. So our new system, wherever we're raising heights, that's only achievable by accessing it through one of our Central City bonuses. So where do you see lower heights or moves to lower heights in the central city? We use them first to preserve the character of historic districts. You're going to see that today. Old Town Chinatown, Grand Avenue are two examples we're going to talk about today. We lower heights to protect designated views. You're going to see a number of cases of that today. We use it to reduce shadows on parks and open spaces. This is part of actually the origins of our tradition of step down to the river. And we use it as a transition to neighborhoods. So on the edges of the central city, I think we're talking about southeast 12th, we tend to taper down the heights there so they can create a transition. So this map that you're seeing is sort of a summary of where we've increased and decreased heights as part of this plan. The orange are height increases. The blue are height decreases. There's a couple of situations. I think these are green on the centrally side, where because it was industrial in the past, you don't even have maximum heights. Industrial zones, you can just build. So we've put those on there. So that's the universe of changes that we're going to be talking about today. And when we get to that section of those amendments, we'll walk through them. Any questions on this background? Does that make sense? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Very good. And I'm sorry, I should have. Are we moving on to the first item?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. So the first item is item A. This is the West Quadrant advisory, the SAC property ownership issue. So I'll turn it over to you now. Sorry.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Joe. So now that you have that background that Joe just provided to you, we'd like to report on some of the work we did in response to Commissioner Fritz's request related to the West Quadrant SAC, Stakeholder Advisory Committee. So just briefly, for those of you who are new to City Council, we started the Central City Planning process by developing some overall policy guidance and then three high-level plans for different Central City geographies. And those are listed on the screen before you. Each of these groups had a committee that advised BPS staff, and the committees were comprised of people who had some sort of stake in the outcome, like advocates for affordable housing, neighborhood interests, environmental interests, and, of course, property owners, business owners, and people who work in the area. So each group reviewed and discussed drafts and concepts that staff developed, but staff produced the final products that went to the Planning and Sustainability Commission. So after the quadrant processes, we worked on a number of additional studies that included a scenic resource inventory that led to all the scenic view work that you have before you. We did a bonus and transfer study that started our work on prioritizing the affordable housing bonus. And those materials and implementation strategies developed as part of that were not part of any of the quadrant planning work committees. So once all the processes that I just described were complete, staff began to integrate it into an early version of the Central City 2035 draft that you have before you. So this screen just shows some background on the West Quadrant SAC, the chronology of the different, the final meeting on the July 2014, and outlines the when the letter went to the ombudsman and the letter to the concerned Portlanders, and on 216 BPS requested after-the-fact disclosures from the various SAC members. So, and the next slide here shows kind of the summary of disclosure, and all of this material is in Volume 6 of the Central City Plan. So then 26 people filled out the form, some others did not, and some were more complete than others. So Commissioner Fritz asked us to prepare a map showing the West Quadrant SAC ownership, and that is what is on the screen, and that is what Carla just distributed to you today. And so while we got some specific information from the disclosure forms, the most information we got was derived from the Multnomah County tax data, sorted by the address to which the tax bill is sent. And so that's how we generated this, and then we checked it, compared it with the disclosure forms that we received. So the map on your screen is the same color palette as the one Joe just talked about, and so it builds off the blue and the oranges. Again, the light orange are height increases, light blue are height decreases, and when those colors are dark, so the dark orange are height increases that properties that are owned by SAC members, the dark blue are height decreases on properties owned by SAC members. There is also some cross-hatching on the map, and that comes from our buildable lands inventory that you may recall from our comprehensive plan process. So there are two different types of those. Some are vacant, underutilized, and some are non-vacant but considered underutilized lots. So So what does this show? I guess it shows that height increases on the stakeholder advisory-owned properties are scattered around the West Quadrant. Some are height increases, some are decreases. Many of the increases are on properties that are not expected to redevelop over the next 20 years, the lifetime of this plan. In addition to the ones that are not cross-hatched, there are a few that are actually under development right now, such as the one right next to the building that we work in, the 1900 building. So that's shown here as a BLI site, but it's actually under development right now. In some cases, you'll see that one particular block has half blue and half orange, and that's generally, if not always, because there's a height increase in that general area, but there's a view corridor that transects that area, so there's a decrease for that view corridor area. The other reason why the blue pattern is kind of complicated is that there are views from a variety of points, such as Washington Park, Terwilliger, and others, and they are views of Mount Hood, Mount St. Helens, Mount Adams, and that sort of thing. So they're crisscrossing all across the central city, which ends up with this kind of interesting pattern. So I think that's everything I had prepared.
Commissioner Fritz?
Thank you. First of all, thank you, staff, for working on this so diligently. I know you've been putting a lot of work in. In fact, things continue to evolve up to the last minute. The map we have in front of us shows all of the height increases and decreases, as well as the ones from the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. So I also want to thank the community members who are here, even though there's no testimony, and those who raised concerns, and also the Ombudsman for writing her report. My intention is not to isolate individual property owners. I believe that since there has been the question about whether or not self-interest may have played any role in this, it really behooves us to look at the whole patterns and see where the patterns make sense and where they don't. One of the key ones that I think doesn't make sense is the small area around the Morrison Bridgehead, and we're going to have that as a separate amendment. What would be helpful to me before our next work session is if we could get the maps with the view sheds written in, because try as I might with the straight lines that are on here, I can't see why some properties are increased. You can see why they're decreased ones, but others are increased. And so I can't imagine what lines could be drawn that would make sense of what I'm seeing in the patterns of this map. So I apologize to Council. I had hoped that we would be even further along than we are, but we have got the data now. Would that be acceptable if we can just tie this one over till next time?
Very good.
Let me just add, Commissioner, that now we have this data, the question that I will be interested in having my colleagues address is, as to any property that you've identified as potentially having a, let's call it a cloud over it, what's the position of staff in terms of the recommendation? Is there, on the merits, is there a reason to take the action that's been proposed? And if not, why not? And what's been the public testimony? I think it's important to identify these properties, but I think it's equally important to hear the arguments pro and con, whatever changes are proposed, because ultimately we get to look at this fresh. Whatever the advisory committees have done, we're the final actors. And my interest is in getting it right, and that is a balance of a lot of factors that frankly go well beyond the question of who owns the property. It goes to the question of what kind of community are we building, and is any recommendation on a particular site consistent with the various things that you put before us earlier? And if not, why not?
Very good. Any further discussion on this item before we move to the next topic? All right, Rachel, you're up next. We're moving on to height and FAR, and I have five proposed amendments there, but I'll let you start up.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. So I have a list here that of eight items, and those eight items align with the items that were part of the agenda in your packet. So I'll be going through each of these today.
By the way, thanks for the cheat sheets you gave us, and thank you also for blowing it up so we can read it. Thank you for both.
So the first item here, Old Town Roseland Theater height area. Through public testimony, we received a proposal to restore the height on the Roseland Theater and the adjacent blocks between Southwest 5th, Broadway, and then from Burnside north to Everett. So it's that six-block area that you see in the maps here. So the map on the right, on the left, is the recommended draft proposal, which was to lower heights in this area. The main reason being that the heights that were set and what exists today is 460 feet in the six-block area. There was thinking that the commercial corridor would continue north. So Big Pink and further south, that would continue north of Burnside. Part of the reason for staff's proposal to reduce the heights to a base of 250 and then an opportunity to get to 325 through bonuses was mostly we didn't see that pattern unfold, that the commercial corridor just has not proceeded north in that way. So it was in an attempt to right-size heights in this area. We do have a lot of smaller blocks and buildings that have been built that some of them of historic or historic resources. However, that we know that the site is also along the transit mall, and there is future development potential in this area. So the amendment to put forward, the mayor's amendment, is to restore heights in the six-block area to the 460 feet that exist today. And that's shown in the map on the right-hand side.
How tall is the Big Pink?
Big Pink is 545 feet.
So 460 feet would be roughly 90% of the Big Pink.
That's correct.
And this would be, so we could have potentially six blocks that have buildings with roughly the same height of the Big Pink on this side of Burnside?
So that's the height envelope that's there today. And the way that we've set height, we set these height envelopes, and this is it offers a pattern within this area. We certainly wouldn't expect that every block would have a building of that height, mostly because the pattern that exists today, we have existing buildings. In order to consolidate a space of that size, it would be challenging to see that level of development on each of these blocks.
Okay.
So I was going to turn it over to
the
mayor at this
point. Yeah,
very good.
I mean, you did an excellent job of describing this, and I appreciate the process that we've set up today. This is actually very helpful for me, and I'm sure it's illustrative for...
Is this the appropriate point if I want to support this amendment to second it? Or
Yeah, sure, if you'd like.
Yeah, I would second this.
Great. That makes it easy. So I am sensitive to the fact that it is on the, it's adjacent to the historic district, and that was something I certainly considered. It's also on the transit mall, and as you know, this is obviously the central city, and it's the area where if we're going to seek density, it's the most appropriate place to locate it. It takes some of the pressure off of some of the established neighborhoods. So I appreciate Commissioner Saltzman seconding that amendment. I don't know if there's further discussion on this before I call the question. Commissioner Fish?
Yeah, I'm going to propose, Mayor, that we not actually take votes until we've gone through the whole package. And the reason is I want to make sure that if, for example, you and Commissioner Saltzman put down a marker here about this site, I would like to see what our collective positions are on some sister amendments, and I'd like to see the whole. If we start doing it piecemeal, we could end up making either inconsistent decisions or we might have to revisit. So if I might suggest, let's take the Part 1 amendments, let's go through them, see if there's a second, and then come back and vote on them after we have a chance to see the forest from the trees.
I think actually what's being proposed is as long as they're seconded, they move on till January
for public comment.
The mayor was going to call a vote.
Okay, great.
Yes, we just need a second.
Perfect.
And then
so
we'll keep it in that package.
That is seconded, so that amendment is now on the table.
Which
and
works
it'll
great
be available
with me
for further
I'd
discussion.
Like to see the context good. And not lock in piecemeal.
Very good. Excellent. So we'll move on to the second item, the Old Town Roseland Theater.
Okay. So the next item is in Newtown, Chinatown, Japantown, within the historic district. And through public testimony, we received a proposal to restore height on the block highlighted in red on the left. And it's within the historic district. And the historic district is the area that is highlighted in green. This is the block in question I've highlighted in red for you. The existing height.
I'm sorry, I'm lost. Which map are you looking at?
The PowerPoint?
So, yes, on the PowerPoint here, I'm highlighted the block within the historic district in red.
You.
And then the historic district, I just wanted to give you the picture of, at least for these maps, the area that is the historic district is in green. Oh, I'm sorry. So page 7 in the packet, if you're looking at your the packet that was distributed.
Thank you.
Yes. So the existing heights in this northern portion of the historic district are 300 feet, bonusable to 425 feet. And that's the full four-block area there to the north in that northern part of the historic district. The recommended draft proposed to reduce heights in this four-block area to 125 feet. We felt that in this area it would better align, that height reduction would better align with future development, development expectations, and the overall character of the historic district.
So I'm going to second the mayor's amendment, and I got a briefing from BPS, Joe and his team, and what persuaded me was looking at the context in terms of surrounding buildings. And Mr. Zender, my recollection is either to the west or the northwest, there's a building that's about 160 feet, or
that's
maybe
right.
I got it reversed. But anyway, that's how you landed at 160.
Correct.
And because there's an apartment building across the way, and you felt that it was consistent. And so that's what persuaded me.
Yeah, we're trying to protect the character of the district, but also be fair and also look for precedent within the district. So that's how we arrived at that.
So if I might give an alternative opinion, because I was going to support the initial amendment. I've heard from the Landmarks Commission, they sent us a briefing that even the increase from 125 to 160 is about 3 more stories, would put a lot more pressure on development and demolition. Currently, the tallest building in this small historic district is 75 feet, which is Prosper Portland's building. So 160 feet would be a huge difference and not likely to get through Historic Landmarks Commission. We've got a problem in that when we don't set realistic expectations, we put a lot of pressure on our commissions to then preserve the district with something that fundamentally can't be passed by historic review.
Commissioner, here's another thing that I found compelling. It currently is allowed up to 350 feet with bonus height option to 425. And I think that when we're talking about substantially reducing the value of an existing piece of property from a legacy property owner in an area that's frankly been neglected for a long time by the city, I want to be careful about how much value we're taking away when we change the height. So since it's currently eligible to 425, I thought 160, which is consistent with the building that's adjacent, was a worthy compromise. It is a 2/3 reduction of what is currently allowed, and if I were a property owner, I'd be somewhat surprised to learn that the value of my property has been substantially reduced by a reduction like that.
I would just say that having a property in a historic district raises the value of the property, in particular if it's not being overshadowed by another out of incongruent building. But so we could move forward with the amendment as proposed by the Mayor and Commissioner Fish, and I'll just signal that I will be advocating for an alternative proposal, and we'll be looking for public input on it.
Yeah, that's good. So B2 is also on the table along with B1. And I just want to point out Commissioner Fish is right that the Pacific Tower immediately adjacent is 160 feet. And that's also consistent with the East Portland Grand Avenue Historic District, which is the same height. So,
but they're not in the district, with all due respect.
That's correct. That is correct. But in terms of the Landmarks Commission approval, I don't anticipate that being a problem. I'm not saying it couldn't be, but I don't anticipate that.
So I'd like to put this into the record, and if you could please have it for next time, it just show where the historic districts are, including this is in the historic district, but now going to be more similar to the other adjacent properties not in the district. Sorry.
Yeah, that'd be great. Item B3.
So this next item is adjacent to the historic district, but it is right outside the district. And through testimony we received, we had a proposal to restore the current height to 350 with an option to bonus to 425. And I've highlighted the proposal came in for on the left-hand side there, the block that's highlighted in red. The staff recommendation through the recommended draft, which is was to lower heights in this area to a base height of 250 with the ability to get to 325. So this is a similar, the recommended draft here and the proposal we had is very similar to what I described for the area just south of this, where the Roseland Theater is. Again, it was basically in an effort to right size heights, and looking at what the pattern of development is that we see in the area.
And again, adjacent to the transit hall.
And again, yes, correct. So as we looked at this more closely, it is adjacent to the transit mall, and there is potential for additional development. What we would suggest, and the mayor's amendment being put forward, is to restore the base height to 350 with the option to bonus to 425 for the four blocks in this area, not just the one block highlighted in red on your screen, but that floor block area to be consistent with the pattern of development that we're seeing in that area.
Is there a second?
Yeah, I'll second that.
Commissioner Saltzman seconds B3. Any further conversation on B3?
May I just make a process suggestion? I would really like us to not rush to be the first person to second, because that kind of shuts down the discussion. So if we could possibly have discussion, if any, before seeking a second. Otherwise, I think I'm going to be very quick to jump in, and I don't really want to do that.
Sounds good. B4.
This next item, and actually the next three slides that I have here, focus on three existing buildings, Big Pink, PacWest, and Wells Fargo. This first building, I'll get to the slide in a moment, but I want to describe for you for these three buildings. Today, these buildings have non-conforming status because they are taller and have higher FARs than exist in the Central City today, but they were approved and met zoning regulations in place at the time. So what that means is they're non-conforming. They can rebuild if they were destroyed in a fire. Today they can rebuild to the same height and same FAR. Our code allows that today. However, we've heard some concerns from the building owners that they've expressed concerns related to insuring and financing the buildings when they have nonconforming status. So we would recommend, and the mayor's amendment to put forward here is to provide these buildings with the heights and the FARs that they have today as constructed. So I wanted to just then go through each of these slides to tell you what that would be. So for Big Pink, existing height of that building today, and Big Pink is the FAR is fine and consistent with what's in our FAR map at 15:1, but their current height is 545 feet. So we would, through the mayor's amendment, make that request that the height would be set at 545. So that's Big Pink. I think, let me just go through all three of them quickly here to show you. For PacWest and Wells Fargo, the amendment would be for Wells Fargo. It's a building at 555 feet. So the request amendment would be to put that at 555. PacWest is 430 feet. And, in fact, our height maps were already reflecting that this particular area could bonus to 460. So we're just recommending maintaining that. So they would have their height at 430, but there would be the ability to get to 460 in the future.
So that's an amendment.
That's correct. And then for PacWest and Wells Fargo, they both are built at a higher FAR, a higher massing than what's on the map today. So for Wells Fargo, that would be changing their floor area ratio to 18:1 and changing PacWest's floor area ratio to 15:1.
Is there a unintended consequence of this? I'm reading the staff comments about essentially giving them conforming status, which they claim at least has some benefits in terms of getting insurance and other things. But what is there a potential unintended consequence of doing this? I can't imagine that this isn't New York City where they tear down buildings like Big Pink to put up other luxury buildings. But is there a public interest in not allowing them to be conforming? In this instance, are we giving something up that at some point down the road we could regret?
Well, you know, I think part of our recommendation is that we judge that there was the risk was not worth holding on to the nonconforming status. We think for these buildings, for the scale of investment that they are, it's a reasonable thing to have height and FAR match their current envelopes. If they were to be redeveloped and the market would support that scale of development on these sites with tearing down a building of that scale in Portland, we would be in a different economic situation than we are right now, for sure. And the building would still be in an anomaly, but it would be replacing something that's sort of been at that scale and is for a long time. We didn't think, for urban design purposes or the likelihood of impact, that it was a risk.
I'll second the mayor's amendment.
Very good. Any further discussion on that? B4 is on the table. B5.
So I'm going to, this is on River Place. I'm going to turn this over to Joe to briefly go through with you.
Okay, so I have a brief set of slides here to talk about the River Place proposed height changes. This is a mid-rise development down on the waterfront, and the property owners worked with the Planning and Sustainability Commission to request a height increase that the Planning and Sustainability Commission approved to take it to, I believe it's a maximum of 200 feet. And also at the Planning and Sustainability Commission, we increased the floor area ratio of the site from 4:1 to 5:1. And that move was primarily to better ensure that we were likely to get the maximum use of the inclusionary housing program because of the benefits that come with being a 5:1 site. The owners of the site are now requesting additional height up to 400 feet on part of the site.
325.
And 325. And part of the reasoning is the argument is that for the rest of South Waterfront, the height approach or approach to height and the maximum heights should apply to this portion of the northern section of what today we'd call South Waterfront. In the past, South Waterfront didn't exist then. It was an industrial area. So there is precedent for increasing the height and bringing it into conformance and treating it for both development purposes and urban design purposes the same way we're treating the rest of the South Waterfront, and that would be a height of 325 feet.
I thought on that slide you just showed South Waterfront was at 250.
Bonusable.
Bonusable to 350? Is that
325.
325.
325.
Yeah. So I'm talking about the maximum heights here. I'm talking about are bonusable heights, include bonus.
And so just looking at that slide, I oppose this amendment because you see that the property on the west behind the proposed increase is at 200 feet. We have a comprehensive plan policy that says there's a step down to the river. So increasing the height in the middle of this development would go up rather than down to the river.
Well, where we are in the proposal is to we're continuing our evaluation of this proposal from the applicant, and part of what we're doing is taking a look at this with the topography in mind as well, Commissioner, because there's from NATO down to this site, there's a significant drop on the bluff. And I believe the 200 feet is on the side of the bluff up to NATO.
That's
so correct. You need to look at the topography. So what we're proposing is to continue this, to bring it back for more discussion. But the approach, I wanted to share with you the approach that we are working on, which is whatever the height increases that we consider for the site, the one that came out of the PSC or something more, that we're going to require a central city master plan provision to apply to the site. And we talked about this probably most recently in terms of the post office site in the central city Broadway corridor. And what that says is to redevelop a piece of land, it's shown on the map, you have to go through a process that involves city staff and the design commission and a public hearing that considers a full sort of range of criteria and things that you need to show that you figured out so that we can see the development of the whole site. If you can remember the discussion around the post office site, there you get to, it's a site that's a big single piece of land now, which in many ways is the same way as this site. And we want to talk about where the streets are going to be and how you're going to use height and how you move around your floor area and what other amenities you're going to provide and do that in more detail as the design develops. So we would apply that approach to this site. And then the other things that we're continuing to work on and we'll bring back that I think can hopefully help address the question you're raising, Commissioner, is we're looking at shadow studies for whatever height proposal, for the proposal that's being requested, as well as some alternatives, the impact of different heights on view corridors, and we'll bring all that information back to share.
With all due respect, it's not like the post office site. There is already a lot of development there. We're already constrained in terms of parking and other infrastructure needs. We've had umpteen changes to the road configuration in that whole area. So asking planning staff to go through this entire exercise seems like a big burden for a single property owner.
Well, Commissioner, I think what persuaded us and I think the Planning and Sustainability Commission in the first place was what's allowed there today under our allowances, height and FAR, is a lot more that's built there. This was their first foray into waterfront development in the end of the 80s and 90s. And bringing more development there and new investment there, we think is going to be very valuable for this part of the waterfront to both activate it more and to tie it into South Waterfront. There are ways to do this reinvestment, and it's a significant reinvestment that could be quite beneficial and a quite beneficial addition to the waterfront. how you design it is critical to accomplishing that. And so we've also, the approach that we're trying to do now is take a look at the heights with the same kind of methods that we're using now for the view corridors and other things. When we did this in the past in the 80s, our approach to this was different in that regard. Now we think, let's look at the site in the real situation, look at the bluff, and come back and show you that information to be able to consider additional heights. At the Planning and Sustainability Commission level, they were willing to step it up a notch. We want to do some additional analysis to see if there's still a case for doing that, and there may or may not be.
Well, it's certainly more than a notch. Do you know what's the ownership pattern in that area? Are they all rental units or are some of them condominiums?
Yeah, this is a single rental piece of property. That's why it's unique and valuable. The condominium property is River Place Phase 1, which is just across Montgomery. And so that is a condominium process, and so that has many owners.
Yeah, so when this is redeveloped, if it does, then all those renters will be out, won't they?
Those renters would be, but the number of units would be significantly increased, potentially, depending on how big it is. And whatever is built in the next generation would be subject to our inclusionary housing policy, so we have the real possibility of getting a mix of affordable housing into the new development. So that, you know, that the baseline sort of things that we get from redevelopment and reinvestment, especially in a situation like this, seemed like they offer a good deal of public value as well as real estate value.
Can I touch on another area of concern? So some earlier amendments, you noted that the properties were adjacent to a transit corridor, and that was, in your judgment, critical to allowing substantial height. The one thing we know about River Place right now is it's somewhat isolated. And it is when you come out of River Place, you're on a failed, you're essentially on a failed transportation, a part of our transportation system. And we know that because I-5 is backed up forever. And all the traffic that's trying to head north and then make a right turn on the bridge is hopelessly stymied at rush hour. And it really, and I know that there's now light rail, but in terms of that particular parcel, it is sort of isolated, landlocked, and the road that you get on. Well, I don't know whether it's Harbor. What's right out front?
I think it's Harbor.
Harbor, and then if you have an hour, you can get to the next intersection, and then hope and a prayer you can get on the bridge. I mean, so to what extent should we be anticipating the significant impacts on our on traffic circulation and on our system, particularly in light of the fact that that's a huge choke point because it's where I-5 terminates?
So both of these points work well together. Today, without any change at all, the site has 4-to-1 FAR. That's bonusable. So the only... And that determines the number of square feet that could be built on the piece of land. The only addition to that we are proposing is to increase it to 5-to-1, and mostly that's so that we have a better shot at getting more of the affordable housing. And 5-to-1, an additional 1-to-1 floor area ratio on that site is about 370,000 square feet of development. Okay. Second thing, you're absolutely right that the portals, the northern and southern way in and out of South Waterfront, are documented to be constrained. The amount of additional square, but at the end, we have projects in the transportation system plan that are anticipating that the district's going to continue to build out. And that we have some ideas that are regularly updated, honestly, in terms of projects, about how to deal with those choke points. We haven't budgeted for them. I mean, they are not funded yet, but they're in the TSP. So we know that at some point the level of development and the level of traffic trips a point, and we need to proceed with those projects. And through the design review through the development review process, a certain amount of that improvement will be linked to the development that pushes us over that edge, or that helps us, you know, trigger the need for that project at that time. So that's why we want to add this site to the required master plan area, because that creates a point where not just Department of Bureau of Transportation planning, but their development review folks can get in and look at the detailed sort of what's really based on what's really being proposed, not just the square feet of development, but how much parking they're providing. Like all of these things that would affect both trip generation and the localized traffic impact get assessed, have to be mitigated, get solved, and could affect the economics of the project. So this idea that's been floating around for this super block kind of development there may or may not happen when the economics are really examined and all the costs of what it's going to take to do that come into play. All we're doing in this move is opening the possibility to do that and to design it in a way that is taller than is allowed today and marginally allows more floor area.
And how does that all relate to the concept of step down to the river?
So step down to the river, what we'd like to bring back to you is show you what we can accomplish here vis-a-vis step down to the river by taking in consideration the bluff and the tall build, all the approaches, even what the Planning and Sustainability Commission has recommended for this, pushes taller buildings to the back of the site. Commissioner, towards the west, up against the hillside, and then tapers it down to the waterfront with, I believe, at the parts of the block closest to the waterfront are at like 125. So this is four blocks. This is not just, it's one site, but it's four city blocks, and we're tapering those heights across that. We're proposing to do that. We're considering doing
that. But why are we assuming that there would be an inclusionary housing play here? Does the zoning require that, or is the applicant saying that is the intent rather than, because right now it's a mix of, well, let's face it, there's the River Place Athletic Club, which is not housing, there's retail, they're essentially proposing to take the River Place Athletic Club site and redevelop it. Why do we assume that inclusionary housing would apply to any development there?
There's no guarantee. Makes it likely is inclusionary housing is triggered by a building of 20 units or more. So at the scale of development we're talking about here, and it's several buildings, it seems the economics of it are going to include residential and include buildings that are more than 20 units. It's what's being talked about is no more than the current program would require, and that's only triggered really if you build residential of a certain scale or you need to get bonus floor area. So part of what happens when you see a proposal like this, it can be very exciting to see the potential of something like this, but at the zoning level, we're just opening the opportunity for someone to come in and try. And we've set the thresholds at a point where we don't want you to try beyond this because our judgment is on the public benefit. It either has negative consequences that we want to avoid or the public benefit's not compelling enough. On the height and the arrangement of the height, we want to bring that back to you to talk about that. On the amount of floor area, we think it's a reasonable move to go from 4-1 to 5-1, especially in the context that we have inclusionary housing now. We think it's really opportune that we've created this Central City Master Plan tool. We've been needing this for a long time, honestly. And applying it to this site, no matter what we do with heights, even if we just left it the way it is now, is something that we would want to do because we'll get a better project out of it and it gives it more flexibility.
So is there a second for this?
So my understanding is you're going to come back on the 6th with some of that further analysis. I can either take a second now and we can offer amendments on the 6th, or we can just move this to the 6th, whatever.
I'll second it.
So we have a second, and we'll have a further presentation and discussion then on this on the 6th, taking into account the questions asked by Commissioners Fritz and Fish. And I'd certainly like to see.
Can I just add
that I've seen. So I have not had a briefing on this directly. My staff person has, but I've seen some diagrams, and you know I think the applicant has been very smart in showing what a world-class Japanese architect of the moment, who also just did the Japanese garden, might do with a beautiful apartment, you know, tower. But one of the things I'm interested, Joe, in knowing more is what are the range of things could they do as of right at that site? Because as we know, as you go from that site south, you know, there's some office buildings. There's a long-term, there's a kind of a hotel that has a long-term occupancy. There's a mix of, there's soon to be a grocery store. I'd just be interested in what are the various options they could do at the site, and does that include office towers? Okay. Well, office towers is not so good for us in terms of inclusionary housing.
Okay, we'll bring that back.
And can I just clarify for the record that this is a motion and a second more for the purposes of giving staff direction. There's not actually an amendment on the table yet. Staff just getting direction. Okay.
Right. Today is just direction, correct. And we'll bring it back.
Yeah, okay. Good. And colleagues, I'm sorry, I have to take a call, so I'm going to turn this over to our trusted council president for item B6.
Just as her amendment is coming up. Well done. Well
yeah,
done.
Nicely done. I think this next one's yours, actually, Commissioner Fish.
I think Fish, you're right.
Okay.
Please go ahead.
So the next item is related to an area right on the edge of the central city in the central east side along Southeast 12th Avenue. And through public testimony, we received a proposal to cap the height at 50 feet. And this would be inclusive of bonus. So 50 feet would be as high as you could go. So the picture I'm showing you here is actually what exists today. So the base height along this area is 50 feet. And the hatch lines there allow a project to get to 125 through bonus. So that's what's in the existing code today. And through Central City 2035, we've not proposed to change that. So this is kind of, it's a no-change area from what exists today and what's in Central City 2035. We would recommend maintaining this base height of 50 and with the ability to go to 125 through bonuses. So we would not recommend, or we're not proposing an amendment on this item, but it was something that we understand the commission was interested in learning more about and discussing.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I'm interested in learning more, but I shouldn't be listing. I don't know why there's a Y next to my name on this one. I think this is one that we were interested in learning more about, but I don't have a strong opinion yet.
Aren't we changing the bonuses so it's only bonuses for affordable housing? Well, the main bonuses for affordable housing?
That's right. That's correct. So in this area with a base height of 50, if they wanted to go above 50, it's bonus height, and they would have the affordable housing build it on site or pay into the fund. There's also the option for historic preservation, but your first bonus is affordable housing.
So, Commissioner Fish, I guess I'm not quite following. Are you interested in proposing this, having heard a little more, or do you want to hear more?
No, I did. I never proposed it.
Okay. So I need a mover as well as a second if anybody's interested in. Seeing none, let's go to the next one. Thank you.
Okay. So the next item is related to height along the park blocks. And through testimony, we received several letters that requested lowering heights along the park blocks, both sides. And the testimony was anywhere from lower the heights to 75 feet. Some requests were 100 feet, applying to both sides of the park blocks. And in addition, we had some requests to consider requiring what we call step backs in the building. So maybe you'd have a podium and then the upper floors step back after six stories. And there was an interest in also removing any eligibility for bonus height along the park blocks. So that's just laying out for you everything we heard through testimony. So this photo here shows you in green the full extent of the park blocks, and you'll see on both sides of the park blocks through Central City 2035, we're proposing the requirement of a shadow study on both sides. So what that means is the shadow study, any increase in height, or using bonus height on either side of the park blocks, the applicant would have to provide us with a shadow study. And the reason for that is to see what kind of shadow would be on the park at different dates and different times of the day. And the code would require that if too much